Shop the Sherwin-Williams 4th of July sale and get 30% off paints and stains June 26th through July 6th. Whether you're refreshing your interior or exterior, we've got the colors to bring your vision to life. And with delivery, getting everything to your door is easier than ever. Shop online to have it delivered or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only, some exclusions apply. See store for details. Delivery available on qualifying orders.
Okay, folks, you are listening to the latest episode, the latest edition as we get towards Christmas of Life on Planet Porky. And, you know, sleigh bells jingling and all that kind of stuff. And good morning, Miss Jones. Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, depending to people when they're listening to this on this fine Friday. Well, you can listen to it on Saturday if you want, but it's Friday today. And I have to say, Miss Jones, as we move towards Christmas, we're starting to spread our wings a little bit, get out and about and meet a few people. You've been around a bit yourself this week, haven't you?
A little bit. In the nicest possible way, yes. I mean, it looks as though London is tumbling towards a tier three situation. So normally by now I would have had about a dozen Christmas lunches and raring to go for some more, you know, but having to be a bit modest about it this year. But I did have a wonderful lunch at the RAC Club on Pall Mall yesterday with a very good friend of mine. And it's just, it's like going back into the 50s in that place.
Yeah,
you know, it's so old and it's so traditional.
Yeah.
And they know you're coming. They've got your name, not on a list, but in their heads when you walk in. They know exactly who you are. They escort you to the cloakroom and they take you up to that lovely little place where there's a huge Christmas tree by the car there. There's an old sort of ancient Rolls Royce in the top of the foyer there. And you wait there.
Golly, I think I've been there once in my life and I can't quite remember the detail. I remember it being very traditional and all that kind of stuff, you know.
But the dining room is huge and it has a ceiling like the Sistine Chapel. It's just splendid.
Absolutely.
And the meal, it was a Christmas lunch.
Yeah.
So we had turkey and all the trimmings and Christmas pudding. And I really felt like Christmas had started after that yesterday.
Yeah. No, that's lovely. And how many people were with you? Just another one?
Just the two of us, because that's the rules. But we were shown to a table for 10. For the first time in my life, I uttered the immortal words, "Have you got anything smaller?"
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, Miss Jones, please. Oh, come on, for goodness sake, you know.
Honestly,
it is a family show, but it's rapidly becoming not a family show, I'm afraid, with these double entendres littered all over the place. My goodness me. Right. I mean, the way you set yourself up for that, I mean, honestly, no shame. It's the lack of shame, which I think shocks me.
It's boring otherwise, isn't it?
Anyway, I got out for lunch this week as well, and I went to...
Oh, where did you go?
Well, I went to Covent Garden to the Lamb and Flag. I've got a mate who had just come back from America, been over there for a while. He in this country, lives in Covent Garden in America. Excuse me, lives in... Oh, dear, something gone wrong with my voice. In America, he lives in Santa Monica and runs a winery. So he was back, and I didn't know what to expect because I've been to about, I think, 4 pubs now since lockdown 2 lifted, and the rules have been different in every single one. So anyway, we go into the Lamb and Flag, and again, it's a very old traditional pub in Covent Garden, you know, the sort of place that used to be used by... Samuel Pepys and all them sort of people, you know, way back. And
I used to go there a lot when I worked in an advertising agency years ago.
Yes.
Just around the corner. It's a lovely old pub.
It is.
You and I went there, actually.
Yeah, I remember that, but I can't remember why. Was it, did we meet somebody there?
Was it your friend Mark?
Mark, could have been. I don't know. I'm not sure. But anyway.
Look. Yeah, anyway, we had a few gins. I know that much.
Yes, that's absolutely true. We did. And anyway, so we were... All pubs now, I think, are opening at 12 o'clock. Lots of pubs used to open at 10 or 11 or 12. There's no point now. There's no clientele at all. So I went in and I said, "Oh, hi." I said, "What are the rules?" And he said, "Well, who are you with?" I said, "I'm with one other person and they're not from the same household, but we're having a business meeting." And we really were genuinely having a business meeting about the winery and investment and all that kind of stuff. So he said, yeah, that's fine. He said, so that table there's for four. Would you sit diagonally opposite each other? I said, yeah, sure. He said, right, now, rules are that you have to order some food with your first drink. And I said, but we want some beer before we start sort of drinking wine with food. And he said, okay, I'll take your order anyway, and I'll give you an hour, you know. So I said, okay. So we had a couple of pints each, right? And then the food came, and then we ordered wine with it. And they interpreted the rule about food with wine that as long as there was still food on the table, you could have more wine. So we had more than one bottle of wine, I'm delighted to say, instead of a couple of hours.
But how long were you there? Because we were told we could only spend 2.5 hours. That was the limit.
Well, we were told that initially, but then hardly anybody else came in. I'm sorry to say that it was, you know, there wasn't much, but it was a lovely atmosphere. There's a roaring fire in there. The Christmas decorations are up. My mate and I were catching up on things we hadn't talked about for months. And certainly more than one bottle of wine was on the table. And we didn't get out until mid-afternoon. There wasn't any time limit. We were, honestly, it was the most comfortable sort of lunch I've had ever, really. I didn't feel under pressure at all. However, last week, I went into a place and I was told maximum of 2 hours at the table, no more drinks once the food had left the table. And at another place, the third place I went into, they introduced a rule saying you can have two more drinks after you've finished your meal. So everybody's interpreting it differently. But I agree with you from what it looks like at the moment. And we're obviously, we both work in central London, although we're based outside of London. I don't come within London, but you do, I think, don't you?
I do, yes. Yeah, I'm in southeast London.
Yeah,
so, yeah.
Yeah, so that, you know, so I, looking at the figures, you can only say it seems almost inevitable going to tier three. But having said that, I'm reading another headline this morning saying that on review, ministers have now discovered there was no reason whatsoever to have brought in the ridiculous 10 p.m. curfew in the first place. And it's nonsense, you know?
What about the track and trace thing? Because, you know, when you used to go into a pub or a restaurant, you had to sign a register or do the thing with your phone or whatever. But that seems to have been abandoned now. Well, although a friend of mine told me she got done by track and trace 2 days ago. So I don't know what the situation with that is now.
Right. The place I went into 2 days ago, not where I had my lunch, but I went to a pub to just get a drink, that was track and trace. And you have to fill in a form, your name, mobile phone number, all that kind of stuff, or take a picture of the app, you know, that's on your phone. Take a picture of the tracer on your app. The point is, I've been doing that since lockdown was lifted the first time around, and I've never had a call or a communication or a text or an email from anybody to say, oh, the pub you were in 3 days ago has registered a COVID-19 case. You know, I've never seen it. I don't know anybody who's caught anything going into a pub. And I think it's ridiculous and ludicrous to close them down. I really do. You know, I speak to pub bosses all the time on my radio show. The last one I spoke to was Hugh Osmond, who's head of Punch Taverns. And he said it's just obliterating the industry and pubs will not open again. A pub near me in Surrey has simply decided not to open again. It just says, sorry, folks, you know, we can't any longer trade in these circumstances. This pub is now shut for good. And there's a, you know, a sign in the window saying that. It's heartbreaking.
Yeah, it's very sad.
Yeah, it certainly is.
Oh, well, I hope it picks up soon.
Well, it's got to, I hope, in the new year. I mean, you know, the vaccine's rolling out now. Now, talking about people having lunches and all that, of course, a colleague of ours, I'm not sure if she's a close colleague of yours or not, but Kay Burley's found herself in a right old pickle, hasn't she?
Well, she has. I mean, this, she's trying to make light of it on Twitter and so on and saying she was taking a holiday anyway. But Sky has now suspended the other colleagues who were with her that night. Yeah. It was her 60th birthday party. They had dinner at the Century Club, which is on Shaftesbury Avenue. I've filmed in there quite a lot over the years. It's a nice venue.
Is it the one that goes up and up and up? It's got about six floors.
Yes. Yeah, you go in the door. It's kind of quite a nondescript door on the main street.
I was going to say, the door looks like the entrance to a warehouse, doesn't it?
Yes. Yeah. And then you go up a very steep staircase and the reception is the top of the first staircase.
That's it, yeah.
And then it has rooms and venues and a theatre and all kinds as you go up. And there's a lovely roof garden there, which they open to the sky during the summer. So they had dinner there. Then the story goes that they went outside onto the street to wait for an Uber to go back to her house, Kay Burley's house.
Yeah.
But then she needed the toilet. Mm. So she goes into another venue to use the facilities. And then the other lot go in with her and they stay there for a couple of hours. Mm. So that doesn't sound like just nipping in to use the loo, does it?
Well, the point is that she said, oh, I realised I'd come out. A, she could have gone back into the Century Club, you know, and I'm not pulling holes in her argument. We've all made mistakes. But B, the other place called Follies is half a mile away. Through a network of narrow Soho streets. She'd have to turn left, right and left about five times. So I can't quite understand how she suddenly ended up in there. But anyway,
The point is, she's saying she made an error of judgment. Well, she spent the entire summer blasting Dominic Cummings.
Absolutely.
To Kingdom Come for the errors that he made. Mm. She, I'm afraid to say, is pretty holier than thou on screen.
Yeah.
And because of this misdemeanour, she now might have lost her job.
No, I totally agree. I've got a bit of sympathy for her because I've made horrendous errors and woken up the next morning thinking I shouldn't have done that, you know, or that wasn't good, or I shouldn't have stood my ground against this, you know, person in my business or something like that. And you feel wretched. You feel wretched because you think, is my career now going to evaporate in front of my very eyes? You know what I mean? Because I stood on a point of principle or I made a terrible mistake. So I know how she will feel. And the worst thing I'd be doing now, if I was Kay Burley, would be flying off to Africa, my beloved Africa, she called it, you know?
I know. In the middle of a pandemic, when millions of people are dying in Africa, what, so you're going to go and do a bit of lion spotting?
Yeah.
I think that also is very blinkered and very inappropriate. I'm
very
sorry
arrogant.
To say.
It's very arrogant to say.
Terribly arrogant.
Well, I'll tell you one reason why she does it. She has some sort of absolute key gold status with British Airways, right? And she can fly almost anywhere in the world first class with British Airways. I don't know what the payment arrangement is. But funnily enough, about 3 years ago, we did a show in New York, okay, and British Airways sponsored it. So there's a big British Airways banner on the stage, and that meant they provided the seats for us and our two production crew to go there and back, right? And, you know, they were club-class seats on British Airways, so it was great for us. So that year, we got invited to the sort of British Airways VIP party, you know what I mean? Held at a really swish hotel in London when British Airways were the most profitable airline in the world. And we went there, and without a shadow of a doubt, Kay Burley was the queen of the castle, honest to God. You know, she was the VIP guest. I think she had a boyfriend who was a British Airways airline pilot at the time. But
well, you would, wouldn't you?
Yeah, well, I suppose you would. That's right, yeah. But nevertheless, she was fated, and I think that's why.
I wonder if they joined the Mile High Club.
Well, again, Miss Jones, I don't know. Honestly, you know, we just get onto a serious subject and all of a sudden you're bringing it down to the level of people indulging in sex on airplanes.
Well, we don't want to bore people, do they? They're here for a reason. They want entertaining.
Well,
they don't want to hear slagging off colleagues, do they, really?
Well, I don't think we can start making those sort of accusations. Yes, very serious subject. But anyway, listen, about Kay.
Is it true that pilots join the Mile High Club on their own?
Miss Jones, I think that we'll get back to Kay Burley, because I was just about to say that for a young lady from Wigan, you know, started work on a Wigan newspaper, she'd done very well. But she has made an awful lot of, what's the word I'm looking for? Not necessarily enemies, but she's rubbed an awful lot of people up the wrong way along the way, if you see what I mean. I know of people who've, you know, had friendships with her over the years. She's been at Sky over 20 years. She was there from the start. But
that's more like about 30 years, I think. 32 years, in fact.
Oh, is it? Yeah.
I first knew her on Today newspaper,
right,
which Martin Townsend was the editor of at the time, I think.
Yeah, that's right. He went on.
Well, maybe it was Martin Dunn. Our Martins roll into one, don't they?
Yeah, yeah.
But she was in the habit, bless her, of bowling into places and saying, "Don't you know who I am?"
Yes.
Which it's always guaranteed to rub people up the wrong way, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. She had friendships with a load of colleagues there, male colleagues, and one of them in particular I know about, a mate of mine. It did not end well. He ended up leaving Sky. I'm not saying it was necessarily her fault, but, you know, something went wrong with the relationship in the working arena, so to speak, you know. But but you see, people are gloating now. You just got to look at social media. And people are really having a go at her. And in fact, Rod Liddell, who is a columnist and used to be the editor, didn't he, of the Today programme on BBC 4, Radio 4. He's got a column in The Sun this morning. He writes a column in the Sunday Times, I think, on a Sunday, and he writes a column in The Spectator, But in his column this morning, he's gleefully calling her, you know, Sky's gob on a stick, Kay Burley, you know. Yeah, yeah.
I like that.
Yeah, is getting a bit of her own treatment now, you know, and sort of expressing the view that she's a bit above herself and all that. But anyway, look, you know, there but for the grace of God, really. But you're quite right. I just can't understand how they possibly came to the conclusion that it was a good idea at a time like this for 10 of them, because there were 10 of them at the Century Club, to get together in a room and have a birthday party. Can you?
It's either supremely out of touch, yeah, or it's a deliberate thumbing of the nose at the rest of us,
yeah,
you know, the great,
yeah,
unwatched.
Yeah.
And I'm afraid that it's just not on, and somebody needs to bang some heads together here. I think somebody needs to put Rita Ora into that little club as well.
Yeah.
It's all very well to say, I'm going to have a birthday party, I can afford to pay a 10 grand fine, so I'll just go around the next day and give them the money. That's not what it's about. It's about spreading a lethal disease and potentially infecting innocent people.
Yeah. No, I totally agree.
They do need to own up, hands up, we did wrong, and they need to pay for it in some way.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. The other thing is about, you know, gatherings in homes. I didn't realise that, you know, you can't just invite your neighbours in anymore and have a drink. And apparently, you know, one of the people who was with it is the Northern correspondent from Sky. So he travelled from Manchester, from a tier three zone down here, decided to go to, you know, a birthday party in a tier two zone and then go and join somebody's house. You know,
and probably stay the night because he's come down all the way from Manchester.
It's
absolute supreme thoughtlessness, this whole thing.
Yes,
I don't think we've heard the last of it. It's a delicious story, and as you say, there but for the grace of God. But I mean, this one will run and run.
Yeah, well, the other thing is where it's mixed up in is that, and we'll talk about something else in a minute, obviously, but that Sky programme she does, Kay Burley, The Breakfast Show, it has really dire viewing figures. I mean, they're really, really poor, you know, compared to the BBC and ITV, minimal. You know, talking about tens of thousands, where you're talking about hundreds of thousands for the other shows, and millions, actually, for the BBC shows. And therefore, the whisper is that Sky are going to take this opportunity to do something about that show. So that I'm afraid that's the trap we all fall in sometimes. If you expose yourself in a vulnerable situation, then comeuppance is often delivered. But anyway, listen, let's talk about something else. Do you ever cook with ginger?
Yeah, all the time, probably every day.
Well, I don't understand this. I suddenly have discovered that there's a world ginger shortage. I didn't even know what they were talking about. I thought, do they mean ginger?
Never seen a piece of ginger root in the supermarket.
Never seen it. I thought they meant ginger biscuit or something, but I didn't know ginger was actually something that existed. I thought that a ginger biscuit was just something that had been put together by a confectioner.
Where have you been?
I don't know.
Ginger root is a really prominent part of cooking, Indian cooking, Asian, Chinese cooking.
Yeah.
Ginger partners with garlic very often.
Yeah, we don't like garlic.
Stuff.
I never eat garlic.
Let me tell you this.
Yeah.
Ginger is loaded with antioxidants.
Okay? Right.
These are the things that prevent stress and damage to your DNA. They help fight off heart disease. You need this stuff. High blood pressure, lung disease, and it promotes healthy aging. So this is an ingredient that you need to get your head around, Mike,
or
if not to your tongue.
Well, maybe. I mean, I have seen the word ginger on the recipes of Chinese restaurants and that kind of stuff, but never took it seriously. You know, I just dismissed it. I didn't realise it was there.
You've travelled all your life. Yes. How can you never have come across a ginger root?
Well, I don't know, because A, you know, it's not something I would ever order in a Chinese restaurant, but B, if you say it's closely connected to garlic, I can't stand garlic. I can't eat garlic.
No, it's not closely connected, but it tastes completely different.
Yeah.
But it's often used together with garlic to flavour dishes. If you've eaten Indian or Chinese food, I guarantee that you've eaten ginger.
Well, maybe, but I'll have to go and try it and see what it tastes like.
Well, it's very good for you. And a great way of using it is to make a sort of brew, a tea, with, you just put some fresh ginger root peeled into a cup with some slices of lemon, fresh lemon, and pour boiling water over that. Make an infusion and then drink that, and that'll boost your immune system.
Gadzooks, I say to myself.
Yeah, gadzooks indeed.
Indeed. Now, talking about health and all that kind of stuff, when do you expect to get the vaccine? Have you worked it out?
Yeah, I think that I'm going to be in group 7.
Right.
It's because I'm not vulnerable, I'm not old, and I'm not in a care home, as far as I know.
Yes.
So I think about group seven, something like that. So maybe not till about next Easter, I'm guessing.
Really? That far off?
How about you? What one are you in?
Well, I don't know. I haven't sort of worked it out yet, but I would imagine I come fairly high up the list in the sense that I'm a gentleman of a certain age. I've got underlying health conditions, even though they are at bay, if you see what I mean. I virtually got rid of diabetes through sheer hard work and determination, which you and I possess, Miss Jones. And there we go. So now I'm afraid I'm going to have to switch this off. What an idiot I am.
Has the Salvation Army turned up, is it?
No, it wasn't Salvation Army. It was my mobile phone, I'm sorry. And should have turned it off.
What's that tune you've got on there?
I don't know. It's one that came with the phone.
You can change that, you know.
Yeah, well, I probably can, but I wouldn't know how to. Right, so there we go. So, as I say, man of a certain age, underlying health problems, bit of diabetes in the past, probably clinically obese, although I'm not obese, if you see what I mean. And so I would expect probably quite soon. Now, what would you think if I said, look, I'll tell you what I'm going to do because I want it sooner rather than later, because then I'll feel able to feel safer going out. And I found somebody who was selling vaccines and I decided to buy one. What would you think of me if I did that?
No, absolutely not. This is not what it's about. This is about equality in the true meaning of the word, okay? So those whose need is greatest get it first. Our turn will come. We've championed the NHS all through this pandemic as a free service to all, which we obviously contribute to. We pay for it through our taxes and so on. But to allow people to buy their way up the chain would be to make a mockery of the NHS.
Yeah, but it would speed things up as well, wouldn't it?
Yeah, but how can you be sure that you're getting a valid vaccine and not something from the dark web that is going to kill you anyway?
Well, yes, I totally agree with that. But at the moment, we do have alternatives to the NHS. We have private medicine, and that private medicine is often delivered by the same practitioners who work in the NHS. Now, I would urge the government to set up an alternative system of private delivery of this vaccine, because it will massively speed things up. People will pay for it. And that could, because we've got so many vaccines coming now, we're going to have more vaccines than people probably after Christmas. So I would urge, you know, a private system.
I think this is about togetherness. We're beating this as a country.
Yeah.
We have made our health service second to none in the world. We're also the first in the world to roll this vaccine out. There's a lot to be proud of about the way we deliver health in this country at the moment. And I think to make it available at a price would be to stamp out that equality aspect of it. And it would undermine the NHS. I think in this instance, we need to stick together and to beat it together. Okay. That's what the message is.
Okay. Do you think everybody should be made to have it?
Yeah, well, no, but you can't in a democratic country. No, you can't force people to have anything.
That's right.
But I think people's own brains should wake up to the fact that it's entirely necessary for us all to be vaccinated. Otherwise, it's not going to protect anybody.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I tell you what else I've read as well. But, you know, they show you these figures of efficacy, something between 70% and 95%, okay? Yeah. By the way, efficacy is a new word, isn't it? It used to be efficiency.
No, it's been around since, well, no, Dickens
used... No, it used to be efficient.
Efficacy quite a lot.
No, I've never used
efficacy
it.
Efficacy is... No, it's an old-fashioned word.
Yeah.
It's just making a comeback. I rather like it. Had you ever heard furlough before?
Furlough, never heard it until furloughing.
See, that word's been around a long time, but they've revived that one too. Yeah. I rather like this government for bringing back ancient language into common use. Yeah.
I do like efficacy, but it used to be, you know, the efficiency factor or something like that. So it's a neater word. I totally agree. But no, so this thing between 70 and 95%, 70% is not good. 95% is absolutely perfect, because you've got to have a 1 in 20 chance of it not taking for you in order to develop herd immunity. Herd immunity needs people who don't respond to a vaccine. Do you see what I mean?
Yes.
I mean, I don't understand it, but that's what I read, you know?
No, and that's why it's important for everyone to have it.
Yeah, I agree. Just on that, and then we'll get off the old vaccine and all that. Just getting back to Kay very briefly, she was then criticised for taking people home and having drinks at home. If you saw that happening in your house next door at midnight, group of people arriving back, would you ring the police?
I'm afraid to say I probably would.
Yes. Well, I wouldn't blame you if you did. I probably wouldn't, because I'm a bit of a libertarian, but I'd be very, very angry with them. And I would get round there the next morning and say, what do you think you're playing at? Or something like that. Yeah. You know what I mean?
My next door neighbours have put a tent up on their terrace. So they've got a nice blue and white striped sort of canvas tent out there.
Yeah.
And they're doing their socialising in the back garden.
Which really? In the tent?
It's, you know, it's an alternative, isn't it? It's not a sort of tent that's got closed sides, because that counts as a room.
Yeah.
So if you've got a sort of, it's not an awning, it's like a roof.
Yeah, kind of, I know what you mean.
If you know what I mean, it's a roof on four legs.
Yeah, I know.
So it's outside, technically, and they've got a patio heater in there.
That's a great
idea. I've only seen it over the fence. I haven't been round.
You don't get invited,
in case anyone's going to criticise me for going round there. No, I haven't been.
So you haven't been round. You've just been spying over the fence, just to make sure your neighbour.
I look out the bathroom window and saw some jolliment going on. I thought, good for you guys.
Yeah, but they didn't invite you, Miss Jones. I mean, you know.
Yeah, well, they do sometimes,
Shop the Sherwin-Williams 4th of July sale and get 30% off paints and stains June 26th through July 6th. Whether you're refreshing your interior or exterior, we've got the colors to bring your vision to life. And with delivery, getting everything to your door is easier than ever. Shop online to have it delivered or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details. Delivery available on qualifying orders.
Okay, folks, you are listening to Life on Planet Porky. By the way, just we had a stop there just for a second or two, folks. I think Miss Jones has developed some kind of a cough. I think it could be because of all the double entendres coming through her voice box,
that
or something like that.
Frog in your throat might have leapt down the line into my microphone.
Yes, well, I don't think so. It is Kenneth Branagh's 60th birthday as we speak. Of course, he's now Sir Kenneth Branagh, isn't he?
I don't like him. I'm sorry.
Well, I was
he's
about
not,
to say
not my cup of tea.
Well, I was about to say, am I being unkind in thinking that? You know, we've talked about people with inflated egos in this. I thought I'd turned that off. I'm awfully sorry. Hang on. Wait a minute.
It's not me.
Yeah, I'm not doing a very good job here, am I? But hang on one
Just
second.
Just turn it off, Mike.
Right, it's gone. So what I was going to say was, speaking to people in the business and all that, I think Sir Kenneth does have a very high opinion of himself. Am I not right or wrong?
Yeah, I've seen him in a couple of things, a bit of Shakespeare. I went to see him in Twelfth Night. And he was spitting all over the stage and being very self-important and pompous. And I thought, I really don't care for you very much.
Yeah. You pick up things during the course of your life in the business we work in. And I remember reading there was a new production he wasn't starring in it. He'd produced it and directed it, okay? And it's at some theatre in London. And people were handed a piece of paper as they went in. And this was the paying public, okay? And they were told, please remain seated at the end of the production for Sir Kenneth and his family party to exit the theatre in privacy. And everybody just ripped them up and threw them on the floor, you know.
I want a tosser, really.
Yeah.
What a pompous git.
Yeah, I know.
You know, had nobody pointed it out, nobody would know who his family was anyway.
Yeah, no,
They'd just get up and walk out like everybody else. They're not royalty.
Yeah, I know. I saw, do you remember Sue Lawley? You know,
yes. Don't you remember the famous joke about her as well, which we can't possibly say on a family show?
No. Well, you better give me a hint. And
no, I'm so not going to.
Really? Okay.
No. People have to write in and get that one written down.
Oh, right. Okay. Well, we won't go there then. Honestly, Miss Jones, even when you're not using the double entendres, you're hinting that you know a few more double entendres if you want them, audience.
You must know the joke about Sue Lawley.
Well, I'm not getting into that now. I'm sorry. I have high moral standards. Anyway, point to my story. See, you think it's all so funny, don't you? See, So anyway, she is interviewing Sir Kenneth Branagh, and, you know, she has really long legs and she crossed her legs over and she was sort of squirming in her seat a little bit, like that Cleo Rockus used to do, you know, when Kenny Everett used to take the mickey out of her, you know what I mean?
And I love you all.
Yeah, I love you all, that kind of stuff. Yeah. And she's interviewing...
Hang on, I'm going to say this properly. Cupid Stunt. That was the name of the character, wasn't it? I said it properly.
Yes.
I didn't embarrass myself.
It was, and you're not double entendring now. That actually was the name of the character in the Kenny Everett show, wasn't it? Yeah. Anyway, So he was only Kenneth Branagh in those days, but very young. I think he was in his 20s, maybe. You know what I mean? And was said to be, you know, the next great. And Sue Lawley couldn't have been more obsequious in saying things to him. This was an actual question. I remember it because it shocked me at the time. Now, Kenneth, you know, it's so lovely to see you today. I mean, what do you make of people who are comparing, you know, your effect on the theatre and your presence on stage as that of Olivier? And
what?
Yes, honest to God, yeah, you know, like Lord Olivier, allegedly our great.
Oh, he fancies himself as Olivier, doesn't he?
And honestly, you should have seen him simper, and you know, he tried to hold the smirk off his face. And, well, you know, that's very flattering, Sue, for you to, you know, suggest.
And it
really put me off. And I've never really seen anything he's been in, which has impressed me. He did one of those Naughty Scan, you know, detective type things. Don't know if you saw him in that.
And no, thank you.
Running around Sweden, you know, and all that kind of stuff. But anyway, look, we're not here to criticise people today, are we? It's not very fair. I'll tell you somebody else who's having a birthday since you and I last spoke was old Donny Osmond, 63. But I think we've spoken about him before, haven't we?
Yeah, because there was a rumour went round for years that we were related to him because his family come from the same part of South Wales as my family. And
Donny Osmond's family?
Yeah.
But they're Mormons from Utah.
Yes, they went out from Merthyr Tydfil hundreds of years ago.
Oh, Merthyr Tydfil, boyo.
Yes.
Down around the valley.
The Mormon community in Utah.
Yeah.
But that's where they came from.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so it was a very funny rumour that went around for years that we were related. I did torment him with it once.
Yeah.
I uttered the immortal words. So did you realise that we're related? And the look on his face was one of horror, as if to say, oh, God, what she's going to come out with next.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, famous man like that, I might have secrets to hide, you see. You might have hit a raw nerve.
Exactly.
Did you ever get to Salt Lake City?
No, my parents went.
Right.
Because they were doing their sort of jaunt around the world, visiting places that the Welsh had populated.
Yeah.
So they went to Patagonia as well in South America.
Oh, yeah, I've been there.
Which has got quite a substantial Welsh community down there as well.
It has, I know. On the Chilean side, actually. Anyway, so I can't remember why I was in Salt Lake City, but I was doing a job there. And it's got spectacular views, the mountains, you know, in the shadow of which Salt Lake City stands. Just absolutely spectacular. It's like the whole of Utah, really, cowboy territory. And they have the funniest licensing laws in the world. It's a completely dry state. There is no alcohol served in restaurants, but they do have drugstores, which open, I think, for 2 hours a day. And not drugstores, liquor stores, I'm sorry, which open for 2 hours a day. And you're allowed to go in there and buy liquor if you can prove you're not a Mormon. You know, if you've got something else to say that you're a Christian or something like that. You know what I mean? I suppose Mormons are Christians, are they?
Yeah, they are.
Yeah,
they believe in God. Yeah,
yeah,
they just have different belief system.
Yeah, that's right.
Have,
yeah,
and then additional bits. Let's say
that's right. And then you can take your booze into the restaurant with you, and they'll give you glasses and all that kind of stuff. But weirdest thing. Did I ever tell you about how I got a drink in Pakistan?
No.
Yeah, because I went back to Pakistan. I think I've told you this with Benazir Bhutto when she was taking over the country. Do you remember? And she flew in, and we all flew in on a plane with her. But again, it's a dry country because it's a Muslim country. But if you could prove that you were a Christian, you could get a certificate from the reception at the hotel. They stayed in a great hotel. I can't remember what it was
called.
Might
have been the one I stayed in Pakistan when that bank collapsed.
Oh, yeah.
Do you remember the BCCI bank?
No. Oh, yes, yes, I do.
Famously,
yes.
About 20 years ago.
Yes.
I went there with Harvey Mann, the picture editor on the Daily Mail,
right,
to do that story. Try and get Mr. Abadi, who was the founder and owner of the bank.
Yeah.
And we stayed in a very flash hotel with skinny cows walking up and down the road outside in the dust and so on.
Golly.
But we drank alcohol in that hotel. How do you prove that you're Christian?
Well, you just do. You have to go and sign a pledge form. You
yeah,
know what I mean?
What do you use to prove it?
Well, I don't know. I think they take you on trust. You know, it's the pledge, so to speak.
Well, that's pointless, isn't it? I mean, you could say you were anything.
Well, I suppose
if it suited you. If you wanted to get a bottle of wine, you could say you were, I don't know, Dutch, yeah. Jewish, whatever you like.
Well, yeah, I know, yeah. But, I mean, I kind of look sort of Christian, if you know what I mean, or a Christian face. You know?
What does a Christian look like?
Well, it looks like me.
I don't look like you.
Well, no, that's absolutely true. That's something to be grateful for, I suppose. But anyway, the crew of the aircraft that we'd flown in on were also in this hotel. And that included 6 or 8 very attractive young air hostesses, okay?
Oh, here we go. So you and the trolley dollies.
Well, we decided to have a bit of a party.
No, I bet you did, yeah. No social distancing that night, was there?
Certainly no social distancing, you're right. And that meant we needed booze. Now, you won't believe this, but the only Western alcohol they had in this hotel was Newcastle Brown Ale. Right.
Oh, God. Yeah. No, not very joking. Elegant, is it?
I'm not joking. Just so when I went and said, look, I'd like my unit of alcohol, please, goes away. And he brings back a bottle of Newcastle Brown in the middle of Pakistan. I know.
No way.
No, he did, honestly. And I said, oh, I said, is that it? He said, yes, that's your unit of alcohol. I said, okay. Anyway, we then pulled off some sort of trick by getting a load of these forms for the pledge and going round the restaurant. Because it's quite a big hotel, and then going outside and talking to people and asking them if they would sign these forms for us. We forged them. And in the end, we got about 40 bottles of brown ale, which was enough to hold a party, you see what I mean? But the problem was, that was all you could drink was the brown ale. So we got a load of champagne glasses and drunk champagne. We drunk brown ale out of champagne glasses and tried to pretend it was champagne. It was the most bizarre party I've ever hosted.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure it was. It's not a very elegant drink, is it, either? Well, however you dress it up with a champagne glass.
Yeah. No, it's not. I agree. And, you know, you can only really drink about 3 or 4 pints of it, I suppose. But anyway, it was, you know, it was an exciting experience.
Did it do the trick?
Nevertheless. Well, I'm not going to go into that, Miss Jones, because unlike you, you know, I prefer to keep, you know, the what shall I say, the more intimate.
You like to read the listeners at the bedroom door.
Excuse me. The more intimate moment of my life remained within me. You know, I don't go around boasting about things. You know what I mean? Not that you do. But anyway, listen, I'll tell you what's great. We always have to have a little story in our podcast. And I've asked my nephew, because the problem with me is, as far as my family are concerned, I'm the man who's got everything. You know what I mean? I mean, I haven't got everything, but they find it very difficult to buy for me for Christmas, you know? And I always ask for a nice new pen or something like that. But anyway, having read a review of McCartney 3, Macca's new solo record, which comes out on December the 22nd, I've told him to arrive at the family house with a copy of that and a record player to play it on. And I thought that would be a really fitting Christmas present. So think of me on Boxing Day afternoon after lunch. We'll all be sitting there listening to the first playing of Macca 3. That'll be quite an experience, won't it?
How amazing. I've got my copy on order. Haven't heard it yet.
Right.
Somebody leaked it online. How dare they? I mean, first of all, how did they get it in the first place?
Yeah.
And why have they done that? What's the point? Can't they wait?
Yeah.
There's this huge build-up for the rest of us to this incredible album, which will be extraordinary because they always are.
Yes.
And they have to go and ruin it. Yeah. So I have deliberately not listened to it online. I'm waiting for my copy to arrive.
Yeah. No, I would. The reviews I read of it said it's almost as melodic as McCartney 1, you know what I mean? It was just called McCartney, wasn't it? And and I'm waiting. I remember the anticipation. My hands were shaking when I took McCartney 1, you know, out of the cover, you know what I mean, and put it in our record player at home in Chester, because I thought, this is McCartney, pure genius individual. What is this going to sound like? And despite the fact that there was quite a lot of criticism of the quality of that one, it still remains one of my favourite records because of what it was. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, but anyway.
What did you make of Egypt Station? His album came out a couple of years ago.
I haven't heard it because...
Oh, you'd love it. You must get Egypt Station. Well, and that'll sort of fill in the gap until you get McCartney 3.
Okay, well, I might do. I just don't know how to get them these days. Not many places sell records.
Well, aren't you on Amazon? Don't you use
Amazon? I'm on
Amazon,
yeah. But I'm... Yeah.
Well, just order a copy from Amazon.
I haven't actually got a record player.
You don't need one. Get a CD and play it in your car.
Yeah, well, I could do that, definitely. They put it out on CD as well, do they? Yeah, okay,
yeah.
Well, I've got a CD player, actually. I still like CDs. I think they're the easiest this method of listening to music.
You could stream it, but I don't think you're going to stream things like that.
I'm not that good at streaming.
Just get a CD, Mike. That's the easiest thing.
Would it be on
Spotify,
by the way?
Yeah, might be.
So I'm signed up to Spotify.
I'm not sure about McCartney's relationship with Spotify.
No, neither am I. Yeah.
Well, check it out anyway.
Yeah, but
I'll buy you that one for Christmas. I would love to do that.
Well, let's wait and see. We might not see each other between now and Christmas. Who knows? And the thing is, as I speak to you, I'm in my office at home, which now doubles up, of course, as my studio. And I've got racks and racks of CDs, and I love every one. Even if it's, you know, hits of the 80s and all that, I know exactly where to go for it. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Which is absolutely super. Now, listen, if now you've got three children, two daughters and a son, right?
Well remembered, yes.
And Mike Tindall, who is the Queen's
grandson-in-law, I guess.
Grandson-in-law, that's absolutely right. Married to Zara Phillips, right, has just announced that they're having a third child and everybody's very happy for them and the Queen will be delighted and all that kind of stuff. And then qualifies that by saying, I hope it's a boy because we've already got two girls. I'm thinking, my God, that could come back and smack you in the face in about 15 years' time, couldn't it, if it's a girl?
Oh, sooner than that, yes. I mean, be grateful for a healthy baby, whatever gender comes out. But certainly don't vilify that child before it's even been born.
Yeah. I mean, I couldn't believe it and I thought, hang on, you're going to regret that, son. Because the minute
he's
the child...
He's a bit thick, isn't he?
He gives that impression, I have to say. I mean, he's a World Cup winning rugby player, so he's got a very flat face, as many of them have, because he's broken his nose about seven times or something. You know what
Didn't
I mean?
Did he have a nose job recently?
He might have done. You might be right. I think with somebody who
had a touch of rhinoplasty, as they call it.
Well, he might have done. He's also had really horrible injuries, like a split liver, right, which he suffered once. And I remember while he was recovering from his split liver operation, he managed to get done for drunken driving coming back from a race meeting. I think it was Cheltenham or something like that, you know, where the country set go. If I've got those facts wrong, Mr. Tindall, I do apologise. But there was certainly some allegation about drink driving when he had a liver injury. But all in all, I would say he's quite a decent bloke, considering he's a member of the royal family, you know.
Yeah, he seems all right, doesn't he? Yeah. They're very down to earth, that family. And they didn't want titles. In fact, Princess Anne didn't want titles for her own children. Zara is not a princess, which I think quite right, really.
Yeah,
they're not going to live a royal life. They don't really do royal duties. So why saddle them with that? Have a normal life.
I totally agree. Now then, you have provided great education for all your children, and particularly your son, who's, you know, great music and all that. So you put out another tweet about him the other night, singing. It sounded lovely.
Isn't that lovely, that work that they're doing at the moment, the choral work?
What is it again?
It's a choral work.
Yeah.
I think there are 12 of them in the group. It's a cappella, so no instruments, just voices.
Right.
And it's sounding fabulous. They're doing an album, I think.
Yeah, well, that's fantastic. Now, would you ever have liked your son to have gone to Eton?
No.
Why?
No. I was dead set on never sending any child of mine to a boarding school. There's so much research nowadays which shows what a damaging experience that is.
Yes.
And a day school and a proper family life are infinitely preferable to a boarding school experience.
Yeah, I agree with all of that. I don't know why people have children and then literally ship them off for 9 months a year.
Because they're inconvenient. Yeah. So, it's, you know, they only have to have them for a couple of exeats a term and, you know, half terms and holidays. I think, and sometimes if kids' families are abroad, they don't even get to go home for half terms and holidays.
No, they don't.
Freddie Mercury, for example, went to a boarding school in India.
Yeah.
His parents lived in Zanzibar, thousands of miles away. He saw them once a year from the age of 8.
Really?
No wonder he was so dysfunctional.
No, I totally agree. I mean, you know, I understand it from maybe the 1890s or something, you know, the sort of Downton Abbey type thing. The Downton Abbey type thing, you had to send your children to boarding schools because you wouldn't send them to the local village school, would you, for obvious reasons?
No. And they lived in the middle of nowhere, and it was much more convenient to do that.
Exactly. And it was always, you know, I don't know, once a week, bring the children out, and some nursemaid would go and get them and line them up for her parents to speak to them, and then they go away again, wouldn't they? It was all sorts of weird stuff like that.
But, and also, a lot of boys, a very high number of boys, have homosexual experiences at school, most of them not voluntarily. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of bullying, there's a lot of coercion, and many of those men are scarred for life.
Yeah, no, I accept that. I accept that. I've never been able to understand how a parent can properly parent the child day and night for all of the developing years of its life if they're locked away in a dormitory somewhere with a load of other weirdos, you know.
The thought of it breaks my heart. I remember when my eldest daughter was 8 and I got married when she was 8.
Right.
I'd had her with a previous partner. Yeah. That hadn't lasted.
Yeah.
And then I was a single mom for 8 years. And then I met my former husband. We got married.
Yeah.
And shortly after we came back from the honeymoon, she came into our bedroom one morning and said, she stood there with her arms folded, looking all cross and petulant.
Yes.
And she said, "I suppose I have to go to boarding school now." And I said, "What? What on earth makes you think that?" And she said, "Well, you've got him now. You don't need me anymore." And I said, I took her into the bed with me and I said, "You will never, ever be sent away to boarding school."
Yeah.
And I made that pact with him, with her, and with any subsequent children. So we had two together.
Yeah.
And no way on this earth would I have sent them away.
No. And of course, you reassured your little girl at 8 she will never come second to anybody in your life. Yeah.
Never. And she still doesn't. She's still number one.
No. Well, exactly.
She's the eldest, but she's the youngest, if you know what I mean.
Okay. But the reason I mention this is because I still revere Eton as being the world's best school. You know what I mean? The world's most famous school.
Well, it isn't. It's number 3 on the list, actually. St. Paul's School is number 1. Winchester School comes above it at number 2. Eton's only number 3 on the list.
That might be in sort of academic returns this year or last year or something like that.
I think so, yeah.
But to me, Eton is, you know, Eton College is the school. I mean, they said that the, you know, the Battle of Waterloo was won on the playing fields of Eton. And that's what I mean. I mean, I think we had 17 prime ministers now who've gone to Eton.
Half the cabinet went there. You know, it kind of tells you everything, doesn't it?
Yeah, I've worked with a couple of people in Fleet Street who went to Eton. There was one who wasn't he briefly married to the lady who wrote the book about Diana, who was like the granddaughter of a famous Russian novelist? What was it?
Oh, Anna Pastrnak.
Yeah, wasn't he with Bill Coles? Is his name, was it?
Anna Pastrnak, that was.
Yeah.
Also, Gene Rook sent her son to Eton College.
Right. Yeah, I knew him. I knew him.
He had a really unusual name. What was it?
I can't remember, but he went to RADA, didn't he? Didn't he go from Eton?
Yeah, I think he did become an actor.
Yeah, he did. He did, and I remember.
Did something happen to him after that? Is he still alive?
Well, I don't know. I know Gene isn't, obviously, because she was the First Lady of Fleet Street. She died years ago. But funnily enough,
he has a very unusual name, like Digby or something, but it wasn't that.
Yeah, he did. No, he did. Funnily enough, after Gene's funeral, he'd organised a reception back at the family house, and it was a massive family house, by the way, and it was covered in posters up and down the stairs, all the awards.
It had a pulpit in the dining room, and she used to get up in the pulpit and speak, you know, as though she were a clergyman or something.
Right. Golly. Yeah. Amazing. You've been there as well?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's down on the Kent and Surrey border, isn't it? Or
somewhere. I remember that. It's so long ago.
Yeah. Anyway, look, my original question about Eton was, there's a big row going on there now because an Eton master posted a blog, you know, a speaking blog or something like that, merely defending the role of the heterosexual man in modern life. And all of a sudden, the colleges divide between those who think he's being completely and utterly transphobic and sexist, and there's no, you know, there's no part for that in the world these days. And it's just another one of these mad woke rows which has infiltrated another great institution, in my view.
Yeah, there's, I mean, obviously there's a lot of fear in the male public school domain, isn't there, about the impression they give of how homosexuality might rule their environment. Nothing against gay people whatsoever, but people who are coerced into it in a school environment, that's a whole different thing.
Well, you could be absolutely right. But anyway, I think it's just, you know, extraordinary to see that sort of institution pulling itself apart. But a lot of top universities now, I include Oxford and Cambridge, they're in the business now of banning people from going and and talking to them if they don't like what they're saying. But there we are. That's the modern age for
That's
you.
That's the world we live in.
The world we live in, indeed. Okay, folks. So thank you very much indeed for tuning in, for listening today, Miss Jones. I hope you have a profitable and fulfilling few days ahead as we go towards Christmas. And we will be communicating again very shortly. I will just remind the audience that over the weekend, you will catch me on talk radio between 5 and 7 on Saturday and between 1 and 4 on Sunday. And I look very much to dispersing more of my knowledge then. What do you think, Miss Jones?
I think that's something very much to look forward to. And in the meantime, stay safe, everyone.
Excellent indeed. So that year, we got invited to the sort of British Airways VIP party, you know what I mean? Held at a really swish hotel in London when British Airways were the most profitable airline in the world. And we went there, and without a shadow of a doubt, Kay Burley was the queen of the castle, honest to God. You know, she was the VIP guest. I think she had a boyfriend who was a British Airways airline pilot at the time. But
well, you would, wouldn't you?
Yeah, well, I suppose you would. That's right, yeah. But nevertheless, she was fated, and I think that's why.
I wonder if they joined the Mile High Club.
Well, again, Miss Jones, I don't know. Honestly, you know, we just get onto a serious subject and all of a sudden you're bringing it down to the level of people indulging in sex on airplanes.
We don't want to bore people, do they? They're here for a reason. They want entertaining.
Well,
they don't want to hear slagging off colleagues, do they really?
Well, I don't think we can start making those sort of accusations. Yes, very serious subject. Now, you won't believe this, but the only Western alcohol they had in this hotel was Newcastle Brown Ale. Right.
Oh, God. Yeah. No, That's not very elegant, is it?
I'm not joking. Just so when I went and said, look, I'd like my unit of alcohol, please, goes away. And he brings back a bottle of Newcastle Brown in the middle of Pakistan. I know.
No way.
No, he did, honestly. Honestly, Miss Jones, even when you're not using the double entendres, you're hinting that you know a few more double entendres if you want them, audience.
You must know the joke about Sue Lawley.
Well, I'm not getting into that now. I'm sorry. I have high moral standards. Anyway, point to my story. See, you think it's all funny, don't you?